Offering my most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, I welcome you to this week's episode of the Afternoon Satsang. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai. And I'm talking to you live from our studios at the Sri Sathya Sai Media Center. It's indeed a pleasure and a wonderful feeling to be back with you live on the Afternoon Satsang. We have been playing out old Afternoon Satsangs for the past few weeks, and it's very kind of you to have put up with that and for your lovely feedback even for the rebroadcast of the Afternoon Satsang. I think I'll also take this opportunity to inform all of you that we are planning a revamp of the Thursday Live broadcast itself and our radio programs, and one of the segments that we are planning to drop in this revamp is the Afternoon Satsang. So I'm not too sure if this is going to be the last episode or I will have the opportunity to speak to you again as part of Afternoon Satsang, but nevertheless I think it is a beautiful moment for me to thank all the listeners who have been giving us enormous support for this program over the close to 10 years of Afternoon Satsang. I think it's a little more than 9 years. In fact, the interesting thing is the first Afternoon Satsang that Arvind and I did was just before the start of the London Olympics. And here I am speaking to you just after the conclusion of the Tokyo Olympics. Speaking about coincidences, I think it's been a beautiful journey. More than anything else, as we have mentioned as many times as we could, during the course of the Afternoon Satsang, it has given us the opportunity to go into Bhagwan's life and message, be it as part of the 25-episode Sathya to Sai that we did. I'm sorry, Satyam Shivam Sundaram that we did as part of Afternoon Satsang, which later became the Sathya to Sai series on video. Or be it reliving Swami's visit to Africa through the African Odyssey series. Or the 60-odd episodes of the Ramakatha Rasavahini and 40 or 30 odd episodes of the Bhagavata Vahini that we did. All of this gave us the opportunity to go into Swami's message, and we can't thank you enough for the company, for the appreciation, for the kind words that you kept giving us all through this series. So I take this moment to thank the Swami in each one of you for this wonderful journey. I'm not here to simply recollect all the beautiful moments that we had as part of Afternoon Satsang. I thought why not do an Afternoon Satsang between you and me? I've always had a partner, be it Arvind or Sai Prakash or Amai, or I've done a few Afternoon Satsangs with Brother Hari Shankar from the Central Trust, with Brother Ganesh from the Telugu team. So today's Afternoon Satsang is going to be different in that sense. It's a satsang between me and all of you. And I do hope that, as always, it is going to be words inspired by Swami. Words that I need to hear as much as each one of you. An opportunity again to pour back into Swami's message and remind ourselves of what great good fortune that we have being able to be even associated with his name, with his form, with his message, and to enrich ourselves through that process. The topic that I wanted to talk to all of you about is eternally relevant, if I could put it that way. If you've had a look at the schedule page that we put out on Wednesdays, the topic mentioned there is strategies for happiness. Is there anybody out there who says that I am not looking at ways to be happy? All of life is nothing but a pursuit of happiness, and spirituality, religion, or even worldliness. It is all meant to make us happy. It is all in the effort to become happy. Spirituality or spiritual inquiry itself is driven by this desire to be more happy. Buddha left his comforts of the palace in search of a means to happiness, isn't it? And everyone who has been struck by pain, struck by unhappiness, and who has had a spiritual bent of mind has always sought freedom from anything else. And that freedom is nothing but a form of happiness, isn't it? Be it Ramana Maharishi, all the great sages of the past, they were all trying to search for this secret for happiness. If you were to look at ourselves as a generation, where we have got ourselves so far, and we live in much, much more luxuries, we have way more conveniences than previous generations. Some of us who are called the millennials, right? Those who were born in the early 80s, or even the, I think, bloomers is the previous generation. We have, I think, lived in a period where we have seen a huge transition, right? From the time when having a phone in the home, a landline phone, was a luxury, having a TV was a luxury, to today we are in a period of time where all of these conveniences are available to us right in our fingertip, right? So we have seen that period of transition, and we can say that today we have way more comforts and conveniences than our parents' generation had, our immediate previous generations had. We have way more security. The earlier part of the century saw two world wars. It saw so many military conflicts and skirmishes across borders between nations that endangered life itself and endangered property, endangered a smooth life. I mean, to start and conclude, start with school education and complete with graduation without any breaks in between was itself a luxury in some of these earlier periods. Today we live in way more convenience, a lot more security for food, security with regards to life, with regards to our ability to pursue our ambitions. But can we claim that we are happier than the previous generation? Can we really say that today I am happier than my parents were? I'm more secure. I'm certainly more well-endowed. But can I say that I'm happier than the previous generation? Our experiences say that conveniences and luxuries give us happiness, right? If we deny that, it goes against our experience, because conveniences and luxuries and pleasures certainly give us happiness. You cannot stand up and say that they do not give us they do not make us happy. That would be a blatant lie, isn't it? So it is meaningless to tell that, oh, there is no happiness in these things, in the name of spirituality, in the name of anything, philosophy or anything, to say that pleasures in life or small luxuries and food and all the other things that give us happiness does not give us happiness. I think that would be a completely wrong thing to say. It would be denying something that we are experiencing in everyday life. And is it that we have to give up all of this happiness in the present in pursuit of some happiness in the future? Is that what spirituality asks us to do? Well, if that is the case, if you and I want to be spiritual, then we must be sad right now. There should be no means to happiness, because if spirituality is all about giving up the happiness of today for a grander happiness of tomorrow, then we all should take a vow of sadness. But a little bit of knowledge of what Swami expected of us, we all know that that is not what Swami expected of us. That is not what Swami wanted for us. In fact, one of the satsangs that we did was on what is the greatest gift that you can give Swami. We literally started brainstorming with this question. I think it was during Swami's birthday season or one of those important festivals. What is the gift that we can give Swami? What is the gift that Swami expects from us? And when we discussed that between us before we came to talk to all of you live, the conclusion that we unanimously came to was Swami wants us to be happy. The greatest gift that you can offer to Swami is our happiness, right? So it is absolutely wrong if we say that the idea of spirituality is giving up the happiness of today in the hope and pursuit of a grander and a deeper and a massive happiness of tomorrow. That cannot be the case. But unfortunately, sometimes that's what happens. You know, we talk of spirituality and a spiritual person as being a very dull and glum-faced person. Swami would often make this remark, you know, why do you have a castor oil face, right? For those of you who don't know what that means, I think even when we were children, castor oil was given as a remedy for certain ailments of the body. And when you take a spoon of castor oil, your face will make a typical contortion, right? A very graphic look on the face of disgust and of irritation. So Swami would often tell our students, why do you have a castor oil face? Which means it looks like you've just had a spoonful of castor oil, right? Literally like that. So Swami would say, no, you should be cheerful. You know, spirituality should make you happy. Spirituality should make you stable, right? When I was doing the answering booth program, another program for which I got enormous support and encouragement from all of you, which I'm ever grateful for, there was one very interesting question that came to me. One of the listeners, his name was Mr. Krishna Mohan, he asked me this very interesting and pertinent question. The question that he sent to us was about happiness, of course, that's why I'm quoting it here. He asked me, are peace and joy really the ultimate goals, or are they the fundamental requirements of life? Are peace and joy ultimate goals, or are they fundamental requirements of life? Isn't that a beautiful question? Of course, I answered it elaborately, as I always do on the Answering Booth program. In case you're looking for that episode, I think it should be easy to find. If you're not able to find, as always, you can just trouble me with a mail and I'll be happy to point you to that episode. But that question is a very important question, right? Are we seeking peace and joy as the ultimate goal of life? But then we need peace and joy even for today, right? As he explained in that question, he said, even if I have to eat my dinner, I need peace. Even if I have to sleep well at night, I need to be in a certain level of peace and joy in my life, should be there, right? Then how can you say that peace and joy is the ultimate goal of life? Isn't it something that you require every day? The truth is, it's both. You need it to lead life, and it is also the ultimate purpose of life. So happiness is both. You need it today, you need it now, and we are in pursuit of happiness, of that supreme happiness too. But then there is a little difference between the two. There is a difference between the happiness that we need now to eat our dinner. There is a difference between that and the happiness that we seek as the ultimate goal of life. As they say, once you have it, there is nothing you need to have thereafter. There is nothing to seek after that, right? Firstly, there is a quantitative difference between the two. Swami would often speak about these two kinds of happiness and how they are different and how they are connected. Swami has spoken on multiple occasions. I've just picked out one clip from one of the many discourses that Swami has given in which he speaks about these two kinds of happiness. And Swami says how they are different quantitatively. So before we move ahead, I want to play that discourse clip for all of you and then I will take up whatever Swami says in that clip. And generally in that discourse, I have not picked up all the points that Swami makes in that discourse, but I will make a few references to what Swami says in that discourse. But in this clip that I'm playing, Swami is going to tell about the difference about the happiness that we feel in everyday life. Swami refers to it as Manavananda or Manushyananda in some places. That is human happiness or human joys. And how is it different from that supreme ultimate happiness, what is sometimes referred to as Brahmananda. So I will play that clip for you. This is from a discourse that Swami delivered during the summer course on 23rd May 2000.
బ్రహ్మానందం అనగా మానవుడు వర్ణించుటకు వీలుడైనటువంటి ఆనందం.
బ్రహ్మానంద సుప్రీం బ్లెస్ ఇస్ బియాండ్ హ్యూమన్ కాంప్రిహెన్షన్.
మానవుడు నిత్య జీవితంలో అనుభవించినటువంటి వచ్చింది ఆనందములన్నీను అనుభవించి పుష్టిగా సంతుష్టిగా తన జీవితమును గడిపేటువంటి ఆనందములకు మానవానందము అని పేరు పెట్టారు.
మ్యాన్ ఇన్ హిస్ డైలీ లైఫ్ వాట్ హీ ఎక్స్పీరియన్సెస్ పుష్టి ద స్ట్రెంగ్త్ సంతుష్టి ద సాటిస్ఫాక్షన్ ద స్టేట్ ఆఫ్ హ్యాపీనెస్ ఇస్ హ్యూమన్ లెవెల్ ఆఫ్ హ్యాపీనెస్ మానవానంద.
అయితే ఈ మానవానందమునకు 1000 రెట్లు అధికమైనటువంటిదే గంధర్వానందము.
1000 times more than the human level of happiness is Gandharvananda.
ఈ గంధర్వానందమునకు 1000 రెట్లు అధికమైనటువంటిదే దేవానందము.
1000 and 1000 times more than Gandharvananda is Devananda.
ఈ దేవానందముల కంటే 1000 రెట్లు అధికమైనటువంటిదే దైవానందము.
1000 times much more than దేవానంద ఇస్ దైవానంద.
ఈ దైవానందమునకు 1000 రెట్లు అధికమైనటువంటిదే మానవత్వములో దేవ గంధర్వానందము.
దట్ ద లేటెంట్ హ్యాపీనెస్ విత్ ఇన్ మ్యాన్ ఇస్ 1000 times మోర్ దెన్ దైవానంద.
ఈ దైవ గంధర్వానందములకు 1000 రెట్లు అధికమైనటువంటిదే బృహస్పతి ఆనందము.
బృహస్పతి ఆనంద ఈస్ 1000 times మోర్ దెన్ దిస్.
ఈ బృహస్పతి ఆనందముల కంటే 1000 రెట్లు అధికమైనటువంటిదే కేవలం ప్రజాపతి ఆనందము.
ప్రజాపతి ఆనంద ఈస్ 1000 times మోర్ దెన్ బృహస్పతి ఆనంద.
ఈ ప్రజాపతి ఆనందముల కంటే 1000 రెట్లు అధికమైనటువంటిదే బ్రహ్మానందం.
మచ్ మోర్ దెన్ దిస్ ఈజ్ బ్రహ్మానంద సుప్రీం బ్లెస్.
మొదటి మానవానందమునకు ఈ బ్రహ్మానందమునకు ఎంత తేడా ఉన్నదో యోచించుకోవచ్చు.
వాట్ లాట్ ఆఫ్ డిఫరెన్స్ లైస్ బిట్వీన్ ద హ్యూమన్ హ్యాపీనెస్ మానవానంద అండ్ బ్రహ్మానంద ద సుప్రీం బ్లెస్.
కానీ మానవునకు ఈ బ్రహ్మానంద తత్వం అనేటువంటిది ఏమిటో అర్థం చేసుకోనకలేక ప్రతిదానికి నేను బ్రహ్మానందంగా ఉన్నాను బ్రహ్మానందంగా ఉన్నాను అని వర్ణిస్తుంటాడు.
మ్యాన్ హ్యాస్ నో ఐడియా ఆఫ్ బ్రహ్మానంద సుప్రీం బ్లిస్ వైల్ హీ బ్రింగ్స్ డౌన్ టు ఎవ్రీ టైనీ లిటిల్ యాక్ట్.
ఒక హోటల్లో వెళ్ళి మంచి భోజనం భుజించేటప్పటికి బా బ్రహ్మానందంగా ఉంది భోజనం అంటాడు.
హీ గోస్ టు ఏ హోటల్ and has his meal and he says Brahmananda, supreme state of
Brahmanandam.
Brahma
gani atma gani pratyekinchinatundi kaadu atmake brahmamani brahmamunike atmani unnadi kanukane atmanandamu brahmanandam ante pratyekamainatundi kaadu.
Brahma and atma are not separate, they are synonyms. And Brahmananda supreme bliss is very much same as the bliss of the self.
So that was the clip where Swami was talking about the various types of ananda, and very beautifully and graphically Swami describes Manavananda and then Devananda, Brahaspati Ananda, Prajapati Ananda. And Swami says all of these are different levels of happiness. And Manavananda that we experience every day, be it when we have a good meal, when we are able to have the luxuries that we have put our eye upon. All of that, that Manavananda is just a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of what that Brahmananda is all about. Swami says a couple of more points in that discourse, which I've not picked out for that clip, but I will just mention it to you. One, human happiness is confined to the body, mind and senses, while Brahmananda has no such limitations. Which means this happiness that we talk of in everyday life, to experience that, you need to be conscious and you need to be operating through the body and the mind, right? If you're in deep sleep, you could have the best of dishes with giving out the most enticing of aromas, but it'll make no difference to you because you are not conscious to that happiness available around you, right? So Manavananda is that which is experienced through this instrument of body, mind and senses and limited to this body, mind, senses. But Brahmananda is something that is beyond that. The other point that Swami makes in that discourse is this human happiness that we speak about is actually a reflection of that divine happiness in the mind. Much like the standard analogy that we often give. It's like the moon being reflected from a pond or the sun being reflected off the waves of the ocean. It's the same light, but it's a reflected light. In the same way, Swami says, the happiness that you experience every day is nothing but a reflection of that Brahmananda which is all around you. And the third and the most important point is, Swami says, man as a creation of divinity has been given this blessing to be able to experience this supreme happiness or Brahmananda as it is as well. We certainly can experience the reflection of that Brahmananda in the mind, which is Manushyananda or human happiness, but we also have the wherewithal and the ability to enjoy the Brahmananda as it is too. So each lifetime that we are talking about, from birth to death, is an opportunity to strive for that supreme happiness that we are capable of achieving. But then for this journey called life, as we journey towards that supreme happiness, the fuel for this journey is the simple happiness that we experience in everyday life. The goal is Brahmananda, but the sukha shanti, or simple joys, comforts, peace that we experience in day-to-day life, is the fuel for this journey. And just as important as the destination is, the fuel is important as well. In Swami's play of words, he would say, santosham ante samtosham. Swami would say, santosha or happiness is samtosha. It is some happiness or little happiness. The same word santosha Swami describes in another way, and we will come to that shortly, another message from that play of words. But this is what it is. So when we talk about a spiritual life, the pursuit of a worldly life is also a pursuit of happiness. A pursuit of a spiritual life is also a pursuit of happiness. But the difference is, in spiritual life, one of the acknowledgements that has to be made is that the goal is to reach that Brahmananda, and this small happiness that we feel or we pursue during life is just to keep us going, keep us happy, healthy and cheerful and motivated till we reach that state. This acknowledgement is very, very important. Swami gives a very beautiful analogy in one of the discourses. He says, this worldly pursuit and education, this was something that Swami was telling the students, I think again, another summer course discourse. Swami said, this secular education and the jobs that you're going to take up is nothing but a thorn fence around the fruit garden. And in that fruit garden, you are growing and hopefully harvesting one day these tasty fruits of Brahmananda. And Swami said, but sadly what we are doing today is we have preserved the thorn bushes inside the garden, and in the fences we are putting the flowering and fruit-giving plants. So when we talk about a spiritual life, the essential similarity between a spiritual and worldly life is, yes, both are pursuits of happiness. But in the spiritual life, we must acknowledge that the happiness that we are pursuing and experiencing in day-to-day life is a fuel that we use for this journey that is eventually going to take us to that supreme happiness. There's another, talking about analogies, a beautiful analogy that Swami gives, and I'm sure I must have given it earlier, definitely as part of the Gita series, if not part of the afternoon satsang. In the olden days, when they had this practice of storing rice grains in godowns, the farmers, after having harvested, and they had to store it till it's taken to the market and sold, they would have these godowns which are made of, you know, a simple thatched hut which would serve as a godown for these rice grains. And they always had the menace with the rats which would come and start eating the grains. So what the farmers would do is they would take some puffed rice, right? What you, I don't know what it's called in other languages, puffed rice, beaten rice, or something which is essentially made of the same rice, but then it is put through this process by which at the end of it, if you take, you know, 1 kg of this puffed rice, it would be into so many sacks, or a huge sack of puffed rice will be just 1 kg, right? They would take this puffed rice and they would put it, you know, right at the entrance or in some place where it is easily accessible for these rodents. And these rodents would come and they would see that puffed rice and they would eat it and they go away, leaving behind the sacks and sacks of grains, untouched. Swami would say that that's precisely what we're all doing. The worldly happiness that we experience and pursue and enjoy are like that puffed rice, which is just a fraction of what is there for the taking, right? Essentially, it's the same. The puffed rice is also made of the same grain, but then it is only a fraction of what the grain is. So Swami says, in the same way, we get distracted from this Brahmananda because this Manushananda is so easily accessible and it becomes a distraction. So as I always say, or used to say on the answering booth, most solutions to our problems and dilemmas begin with the correct acknowledgements. Following it comes later, but first acknowledgements and, you know, having that vision clear is most important to find solutions. And the mind is, at the end of the day, an instrument. Right? It's an instrument that is meant for this purpose, meant for this journey. As I said, happiness is the fuel, but the machine is the mind. And like all instruments, this instrument of the mind will also be going out of order every now and then, losing focus. And that's because it is being used in the world, as Swami would say, because you're using it in the world, it becomes worldly. And what is required is recalibration every now and then. And when we recalibrate, the reference for recalibration should be true. So whatever we hear from Swami's discourses, what we heard just now about Brahmananda, whatever Swami speaks about the goal of life, that should be the reference which we use to recalibrate our mind. There is no point, if you're going to recalibrate this mind which goes out of order, using worldly references, right? So for a spiritual life, what are those acknowledgements that we need to start with? Firstly, acknowledge that smaller happiness is not the ultimate goal of life. That is the first important acknowledgement. But secondly, they are important too. Spirituality is not about negating the importance of these happiness and pleasures and peace that we find in everyday life. Because going to school is important, catching the school bus is also equally important, isn't it? But catching the school bus is not an end on its own. It is only a means. But because going to school on time is important, catching the school bus also becomes important. So, the happiness that we experience today, tomorrow, and till we are in this body is also equally important. And thirdly, as I just said, because the mind is in the world, among the glitz of luxuries and pleasures, the mind will lose focus every now and then. That is very natural. And to recalibrate it, you should not use the world, but you should use the words of the master. You should use the words of Swami for us. So these are the acknowledgements that you should begin with if your pursuit of happiness is going to be guided by spirituality. Firstly, the whole pursuit is in pursuit of that supreme happiness. Whatever it is, we are not going to define that now. I'm not going into that. I just played that clip from Swami. That happiness which is beyond the body and the mind, that happiness which is infinite, that happiness which does not depend on physical events or objects. So the goal of life is to reach that happiness. The means is this life that we have between birth and death. And for this life to progress properly, you need happiness and peace as we go through it. Acknowledging that is also important. And to constantly recalibrate yourself that this is the truth, this is what life is meant for, is also important for a spiritual life. Before we move ahead, dear listeners, I'll just play a small song for you so that you can take a break from listening to my voice all the time. On the other side of it, we will talk about this everyday happiness. Today's afternoon satsang, the strategies of happiness, is not about that Brahmananda. It is about Manushananda and how do we go about gathering that, because that is also equally important, as I will tell you after this short break. Listen to the song. Don't go away. We will resume our satsang on the strategies of happiness after this break. Thank you. Welcome back, dear listeners. It's a beautiful song from the yester years. Just takes you back in those to those good old sand days of Prashanthi, doesn't it? Coming back to what we were discussing, as I just told you before I took that break, today we're going to be focusing on the happiness that we experience every day, and not the happiness that Swami said is 1,000 times more than this and 1,000 times more than that. We will reserve that happiness. And the reason why I'm saying that is because spirituality should also help us in the pursuit of this lesser happiness. Spirituality, as I mentioned, is not giving up this for that. That can never be the right strategy. It is wisely using the means that we have for everyday happiness so that it slowly leads us to that Brahmanandam Paramasukhadam, as Swami would say. And that's what Swami says in that discourse that I played. Swami says, the way you pursue your life goals and happiness and joys and pleasures in the present, in this life, that will itself decide if you are on the right path to achieving that supreme state. Forget about spirituality. You know, we look around and we find that we increasingly see cases of people facing burnouts and mental health issues and going through some sort of midlife crisis, and midlife crisis which comes in one quarter of the life itself. We see all these kind of issues in these days, right? We somehow seem to have a wrong approach to achieving this happiness itself, be it spirituality or otherwise. There's something that we are doing wrong. So that is why I think it is important to relook at the strategies to make ourselves happy in this lifetime. Now I'm going to give an explanation which is not directly from a discourse. So I'm telling that to you right up front. But just indulge me for a few minutes, because it's a concept which I feel might help us in understanding Swami's words better. The conclusion at the end of it is also going to be purely based on Swami's words. But what I'm saying in the next 1 minute or so is going to be something that I'm just looking at life at that way. And I'm just guessing that that might be the right approach. We often speak about this concept of prarabdha karma, right? And I'm sure most of our listeners will be fairly aware of that. We've spoken extensively about that, be it on this program or the other programs. If I were to put it in one sentence, prarabdha is that portion of our karma that we bring to one lifetime so that we can work it out between birth and death of one lifetime. That is what is referred to as prarabdha, right? Sanchita is the entire bank of karmas and consequences that we keep gathering over lifetimes. Prarabdha is that which we bring to one lifetime to work out. So that's why it is often called destiny, because we have already decided some aspects of our lifetime, right? That's the concept of karma with regards to prarabdha karma. And when we say prarabdha, the karma that we want to work out in this lifetime, I don't think it's just suffering, right? We always say that karma means, oh, my karma, it means that I am meant to suffer like this. But karma is not merely just suffering. I think it also means success, happiness, achievements, everything that we wish to experience in a lifetime can be defined by this prarabdha karma. But this prarabdha is related to this ego, right? Because that is what brings, that is what holds this connection between this entire karma and this body and mind. We take this birth in this body and mind, attached to this ego, and attached to this ego, all the karma that is there is brought into this lifetime. Going back to that idea that everyday happiness is like the fuel that we have for this journey called life. When we come into life, we come with a fixed quantity of happiness. Right? So this is my statement I'm making, trying to understand what Prarabdha is and what Swami is trying to tell, not directly from a discourse. Maybe when we come into a lifetime, when we take up a life, the amount of happiness that we can experience in a lifetime is probably fixed. It is pretty much like the food that you carry for a journey. And let us say that there is no way you can buy food on the way. So the food that you bring at the start of the journey is all that you have till you reach your destination. And because Prarabdha is all about experiences and enjoying and suffering, maybe when we get into a life, the amount of happiness that we can experience between this interval of birth and death is fixed. And we have to judiciously use this happiness and spread it across this lifetime so that this journey is comfortable from start to finish and the journey leads us to that destination. A couple of days back, I was talking to one of my classmates and he was reliving his experience as a child when he would come with his parents all the way from Vijayawada to Prashanthi Nilayam. It used to be a 3-day trip, multiple trains. You go from meter gauge to middle gauge, broad gauge to meter gauge, and you stop at various stations in between. I think anything between 3 and 5 trains had to be changed before they're able to come to Prashanthi Nilayam, and it would be a 3-day trip. And of course, he was recollecting those days with such fondness. He was saying that, you know, when they start a family of 4 or 5, they would pack food that would last for these 3 days. And how would they pack the food? They would be chitrannam or tamarind rice or lemon rice. That is something that would last you for 1.5 days. You know, if you keep it for more than 1.5 days, it'll get spoiled. But it'll last for 1.5 days. So there will be a little bit of chitrannam that will take care of you for a couple of meals. Then there would be rotis that will last you for a little more than a couple of days. So even if you have packed it before you start the journey, you could pick it up in the second or later half of the second day and you can still be sure that it's going to taste good. And then there would be all of these eatables that is made of puffed rice or dry stuff, mixtures and things like that. That will not get spoiled at all. You can be sure that it's going to be fine till you reach the destination, and even if you're coming back, it'll be good to eat. So they would pack their food in such a way, and they had to eat in such a manner that each one is eaten before it is spoilt. Each one is kept so that it is available for the rest of the journey, and you manage yourself from start to finish. You don't eat up all the rice in one day, or you can't finish the puffed rice and keep the chitrannam for the 3rd day, because that will not work out. In the same way, the joys related to the body have been given to us so we can undertake this journey called life in pursuit of that supreme happiness, and they are meant to be enjoyed and experienced. It is not to be given up, it is not to be completely discarded, but they have to be enjoyed and experienced in their own time, in the right quantity. Just like how you ration that food based on the nature of the food and the distance of the journey and all of that, right? So if this is the situation about happiness, we will have to come up with strategies so that this happiness, which is a limited resource that we have for this lifetime, is evenly spread across this entire lifetime, and we are able to enjoy the present as well as ensure that the direction that this present is taking us is towards that ultimate goal. And of course, there are also some cheat codes in this, and we will talk about that a little later, right? So this is what we are supposed to be doing. And of course, the unsaid part is none of us know how much happiness is there in that reserve. It is like a vessel which we cannot look into and see how much is left. But still, we can strategize and we are not too sure how long this journey is. So for this optimization of happiness in pursuit of the supreme happiness, what are the strategies that we can come up and what are the tools that we have in hand? The main thing is optimization, isn't it? What kind of happiness should be enjoyed in what stage of life? A student should enjoy the happiness of that phase of life, the happiness that is got out of gathering knowledge, the happiness that is got out of good friendships, the happiness that is got out of games and play, right? There is so much happiness in all of that, and that happiness is meant for that student life. So the happiness that is meant for that phase of life has to be experienced then. Being a student, one should not seek the happiness that is got out of earning money, for example. That happiness is meant for the next stage of life. Similarly, the joys of a bachelor's life are different from the joys of a married person's life. If you spend that happiness in this phase, you're most likely to go into that phase and not find that happiness. You might find that phase of life dull, isn't it? In the same way, you know, when you're 50, 60 years, you should not be aspiring for the happiness of a teenager. The happiness of a teenager, you should have experienced it when you were a teenager. You cannot try to extend the joys of the young life that is meant for a young body and a young mind well into your senior years. So an easy way to approach this, to ensure that the happiness is used at the right phase of life, in the right quantity, in the right manner, Swami says, is to always attach this pursuit of happiness to dharma, to propriety, to righteousness. And that brings me to the definition of santosha, or the play of words that I said Swami does. There I said, Swami said, santosha is samtosha. Swami says here, the word tosha means happiness and sam means good or righteous. So santosha is the right kind of happiness, which means based on desha kala paristhiti, based on circumstances, based on which phase of life you are in, which age you are in, that happiness related to that phase, that age, that circumstance has to be experienced or can be experienced, and that pursuit should not be hurting or harming others. That's the simple definition of ensuring that the pursuit of happiness is always attached to dharma. If we follow this one thing, the usage of happiness in this journey will be so optimized that we can ensure that it is spread across this life. There will always be restrictions in life, right? When we talk about discipline, discipline is always about restriction. You should not do something at this time, or you should do this thing at this particular time, which means there are restrictions. But there is enough scope for finding happiness within those restrictions, and that is a very important acknowledgement that you have to make. If you are not able to let go of happiness not meant for that stage, that means we are not mature enough in our mind. If with my salary, I cannot afford a penthouse, if with my salary, I cannot afford a luxury car, if with my salary, I cannot enjoy an exotic vacation, I should learn to let go of it. That does not mean there is no scope for happiness for me. My happiness should be found within my boundaries. So does that mean that we should not be ambitious? Does that mean that, if I'm earning a certain amount of money, I should not aspire for ambitions that can be fulfilled by a bigger paycheck? Again, that is not the case. Swami has never told us, don't be ambitious. Even ambition should be controlled by propriety and dharma. That brings me to the next point. Happiness can be found in different ways. Luxuries and pleasures are just one type or one means by which you can find this happiness, and the happiness found through them is extremely limited, right? An ice cream can give you only that much happiness. It cannot give you more. A vacation can give you only that much happiness. There is a certain amount it can be useful, and that's all it can be got from there. But there is also happiness in the process. There is happiness in the effort. There is happiness in the struggle to reach a certain happiness too. So when you set for yourself an ambition, there's nothing wrong in that. I want to be the CEO of my company 10 years down the line, 15 years down the line. There is absolutely nothing wrong. But using the same clause of dharma, pursue that happiness within the boundaries of dharma and pursue it with patience. If you go about trying to achieve it by hook or crook, you will have the success, right? You might find the happiness that is got from that luxury, find the happiness that is got from that achievement, but you have missed out the happiness that can be got through the process. And I'm not even talking about the wrong karmas that you would do on the way and the accumulation of the bad karmas. So if I have an ambition that I wish to achieve, there is nothing wrong about that, but ensure that the pursuit of that ambition is within these boundaries, not merely because that's the right thing to do and that's one reason good enough, but there is happiness that is to be experienced in the effort, in the struggle, in the process, which will be missed out. And all the happiness that you're missing out will add to the emptiness in the life that we all feel. And I think that is really something that we are finding in youth of these days. Many things are coming so easily to life, easy to them, that they are missing out on the happiness that could have been enjoyed in the process. That is why Swami would say, Shraddha and Saburi are very, very important. Have the patience and also have the earnestness. Shraddha is a very interesting word. It means faith. It also means earnestness. Swami would say, Shraddhavan labhate jnanam, right? So if you have faith, you can have the knowledge. If you have earnestness, what is required is earnestness. So you should be able to strive earnestly. At the same time, you should be able to have the patience to let things happen in their own time. And this itself is one of the best ways in which you can optimize this limited store of happiness that you have, which you have to use little by little through your life. And this itself is a means of sealing on desires, right? When Swami speaks about sealing on desires, Swami did not say completely wipe out all desires. Swami said desires have to be pursued, but in a certain way. Dharma, Artha, Kama. If Kama and Artha are always kept under the bracket of Dharma, you can ensure that pursuit of Kama and Artha will eventually lead you to the pursuit of Moksha. Right? So the best sealing on desires, a lot of people ask, how do we practice sealing on desires? One of the best ways to start with is live and spend within your means. And be prepared to patiently put in the effort that is required. Avoid all shortcuts to reach your ambition. If we are able to practice this, I think automatically there will be the first stage of sealing on desires, right? If you want to achieve something, as I said, I want to be the CEO of my company. Nothing wrong, but be ready to slog for the next 20, 30 years. Be ready to put in that effort. I want my startup company to be one of the top companies. I want it to have a net worth of so many billion dollars. Nothing wrong, but be ready to put in that effort and be ready to put in those 30 years or 20 years or what it takes. Looking around and seeing somebody who was a school dropout or a college dropout who starts a company and within 5 years it's become one of the biggest companies in the country. we cannot start off with that as the desire. We should be able to put in that effort, and that's why always attaching pursuit of happiness, pursuit of luxuries, pursuit of ambitions to dharma. I will not take any shortcuts in this process. I will not hurt or harm anybody in this process. I will take the path that is long, maybe. And the reason I'm telling you that is because there is happiness to be found on the path. We are missing out all of that when we are jumping the gun. And when I started, I said, you know, when we look at the previous generation, when we look at our parents and our grandparents, we find that sometimes we do feel they were happier than we were. It's because this ceiling on desires that I'm talking about now was in a way built into the society itself, was built into the way they led their lives. In the past, the salaries were low, the increments were less and far to come by. So the milestones that they achieved in their life were spread across a lifetime. If you look at your own grandparents or great-grandparents, you would find that they would probably struggle in their profession for 10, 20 years, after which they could have probably been able to afford a vehicle. And then they would have, at the time of their retirement, after having worked for 30, 40 years, they would have been able to achieve the milestone of building their own house. The milestones that they were achieving were spread across their life, and that was happening quite naturally because the society itself was like that. I think I can really tell this at least for the society in India. I'm not too sure about how it was in other countries, but in India it was like that, right? But today, what are we seeing? Somebody graduates at the age of 22, 23. By the time they reach 30, they have a car, they have a house, they have traveled the world. And when they look ahead, there is nothing more to achieve. There is nothing more to be happy about. We end up cramping more and more milestones within that first quarter of our life, and then we find life to be so meaningless and listless, right? You cannot fill that emptiness with spirituality. I think that's again a mistake that we all try to do. We've got bored of this. Now let's turn to something spiritual. It might help for a little bit, but it's not going to help in the long run, right? It's just a matter of time. Maybe by 40, you'll be bored of spirituality too. The better way is to spread out the happiness that we experience in every day through life, right? And the feature of Kali Yuga is that as we progress further and further, deeper and deeper into Kali Yuga, the way society regulates us is going to be lesser and lesser. The influence of society in helping us regulate our life is going to be lesser and lesser. That is why personal discipline becomes very important. Individually, we have to take control of our lives. So if I were to quickly summarize whatever I said in that portion, first point, choose to live within your means. And to choose to live within your means does not mean giving up happiness. When you tell someone, live within your means and don't aspire for too much, it does not mean give up happiness. It means enjoy the happiness that is within your means right now, and that is happiness too. There is joy in every stage of life. Don't be in a hurry to go to the next one. Savor the moment. Savor this lap of life. That is what it means by saying live within your means. When you can afford a two-wheeler, great. When you can afford a four-wheeler, great. But there is joy in walking. There is joy in cycling. Enjoy that as well when that is your lot in life at that moment. Thirdly, put in hard work. Be it in career, be it in a relationship, or even in developing a talent. Because success alone cannot give you all the happiness. Success certainly gives you happiness, but that is the happiness that comes from success. The happiness that comes from the process will come only from the process. The happiness that comes from hard work will only come from hard work. It will not come from the achievement. So put in the hard work, be prepared to take that time, take that effort. And finally, along with saburi, along with that patience, you also have to have shraddha or faith. And what is that faith? What is meant for me will come to me, and that is all right. As I said, we are drawing out of happiness from a vessel which we don't know how much happiness it contains. So we don't know, you know, am I meant to achieve this in life? Am I meant to have children? Am I meant to have a stable relationship? Am I meant to have this talent? We never know. Put in the effort, put in the hard work, and have the faith. If it is meant to be, it will come to me. If it is not meant to be, life is not denying you happiness. It is only denying you happiness in that form. It is telling you, you can still find happiness in some other form. Right? So that acknowledgement or comes only with shraddha, with faith. And that is why Swami plays such a huge part in our life. You can pursue anything. You have an ambition. You want to go after a relationship. You want to achieve something in life. Go after it. But with the faith that if Swami wants that to be, it will be. And if it is not Swami's will, jolly well we'll find happiness in some other way. Right? Now let me come to that cheat code which I said. In the strategies of happiness as we go through life, there are some cheat codes. If the happiness that we are meant to experience in a lifetime is limited, as I said, it is related to prarabdha. Prarabdha is related to our ego. And when we talk about ego, we are talking about the body and the mind, right? It is limited to the body and the mind. But as we go through life, we have the ability to experience such happiness which has got nothing to do with the body and the mind. And that happiness is truly speaking unlimited. It does not depend on how much you have carried in the beginning of the journey or how much you have to optimize through this journey. That happiness is not related to the body and the mind. It's not related to the prarabdha. You can enjoy as much as you want. And what is that happiness? The happiness that is drawn from qualities such as compassion, love, kindness, selflessness. This happiness is unlimited in this lifetime. Prarabdha is related only to the ego, only to the body and the mind. But these are emotions that are not related to the body and the mind. These are relations. These are qualities of the Atma, of the spirit, which are based on oneness, isn't it? We've spoken so many times in so many satsangs about it. Love, kindness, compassion, empathy, sympathy, these are all born out of oneness, which is the nature of the Atma. So there is no restriction on how much happiness you can draw in a lifetime from these emotions. And that is a big relief, isn't it? And even this must be spread across life. We cannot say that I will encash all the happiness that I can get out of my charity at the end of my lifetime. That is why they say small acts of kindness. As we go through life, take these booster doses of happiness every now and then through simple acts of kindness, simple acts of compassion. Help a colleague without having any expectations out of him or her. Help somebody on the road without having any expectations from that person. The joy that can be drawn from that is unsullied by the ego. And this you can enjoy as much as you want through life. And sometimes it becomes very, very important to cash in on this. Because sometimes we will be in that moment where nothing can give us happiness. Our work might not be able to give us happiness. Our family may not be able to give us happiness. Our profession may not be able to give us happiness. But this happiness is always available. And sometimes it is important to dip our fingers into this and take in helping, right? There is another thing that I wanted to talk about, and another acknowledgement as part of the strategies that I was telling. This is based on a concept, a study. As I was telling you, the happiness that the generations before us experienced somehow seems to be more than the happiness that we experience today, or even in our own lifetime. If you have come to a stage in life where you are more affluent than you were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you still can look back at that life and say that, yeah, I miss that time now. Or I miss the time when, you know, I had nothing to do and I could just hang out with my friends. I miss the time when we did not have this 48-inch or 52-inch TV and I could just go out into the garden and spend some time where happiness did not cost any money, right? If we can look back at any moment in our life and feel happy about it, I think that is an indication that happiness is not attached to how much money you have, how much influence you have, or not even how many friends you have. So this is an idea that has always been around, that maybe the happiness of the poor man is comparable to the happiness of the rich man. If that is the case, then happiness is not hinged to any of the things that we give importance to today. Sometime in the year 1971, there were a couple of researchers wanted to somehow lay their hand on a study or do a short research themselves so that they can quantitatively and scientifically prove this, that there is a base level of happiness that is available to everyone. It does not depend on whether you live in a luxurious house or you live on the streets. So the way they went about doing this, two researchers in the year 1971, their names were Brickman and Campbell, and they released their study in an essay that they wrote called Hedonic Relativism and Planning the Good Society. Hedonic Relativism and Planning the Good Society. So what they did was pretty interesting. You know, they went after individuals in whose life where there were spikes of happiness and spikes of sadness. There were events which clearly made them really happy, and there were events that could really bring them down. So they went after people who had won lotteries, right? That's pretty much the best example that you can think of when you suddenly have a huge amount of fortune coming your way. So they decided to go after these people who had won lotteries, who suddenly became very happy in their life, and they went after people who had met very tragic accidents in their life, especially accidents which left them either paralyzed or led to a loss of a limb. It's a very sad event that can happen in one's life, right? So these are like peaks and troughs. So when they went and studied these people, the whole idea was, okay, you had this event where you became really happy because you won a lottery. 2 years down the line, or 3 years down the line, what is the level of happiness you are in? Or you've met with this accident and you've been really down for 3 months, you've been depressed, you've been very low. 3 years down the line, 2 years down the line, what is your state of happiness? What is your mental state? And they could pretty conclusively prove that however bad the situation is, or however lucky the person felt at that moment when that happiness peak happened, there is a leveling of happiness that happens after a period of time. So when they say time heals, this is a scientific study that actually proved that time does heal. There could be an alternated or altered perspective about life, right? Suppose I meet with an accident, I lose a limb, or I'm paralyzed. I probably will have an altered perspective about life and what life is about. You know, we're not considering that. The human mind has an inbuilt ability to stabilize itself based on the circumstances around, and that is what was found from this study. So they came up with this concept called hedonic treadmill, right? Hedonic treadmill or hedonic adaptation. where the mind, after events that produced spikes in happiness or spikes in sorrow, finds some way to come back to a stable state of happiness. Why is this really important, and why am I talking about this? Much of the sadness that we feel in life is because we are not able to achieve something, or we have missed something. Oh, I wish I was that, or I wish I could be this. Or you look at someone and say that, oh, I wish I could be as talented as this person. When you're talking about it from the point of view of happiness, when talking about how happy you feel, what you are chasing, what you feel that if I had that, if I had got that lottery, I would have been so much happy. Here's the good news or the bad news. 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, you will be back to the same level of happiness that you are in right now, if that event had happened. So is it really worth chasing that and betting all your happiness on that one moment, or feeling sad saying that, oh, that did not happen to me in my life. Oh, I did not get admission in that college, and had I got that, I would have been so different. Life would have been different, but there is no guarantee that your state of happiness would have been different. When you got the admission, there would have been a spike. You would have been on top of the world. But 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, your mind would have adapted to that spike. And that is what is referred to as hedonic adaptation or hedonic treadmill. So the mind always has, according to Brickman and Campbell, has this ability and tendency to come back to this stationary level of happiness or set point, no matter what the experience of major positive or negative events that one goes through in life. There will be changes, right? There will be adaptations in the mind. If I suddenly become an extremely rich person and I'm able to afford so much more luxury than I was able to afford yesterday, the mind will eventually, you know, we talk of it as mind getting bored with luxuries or mind getting bored with affluence and money. But what the mind is actually doing is it is adapting to this new situation in life so that your set point or your basic level of happiness does not change much. So the most important thing that this study shows us is that there is no point in chasing this hedonic pleasures. The word hedonic or hedonism has been coined by one of the greatest philosophers of our times, Aristotle. Aristotle speaks about two kinds of happiness, hedonic and eudaimonia or eudaimonic. I hope I'm pronouncing those words right. The two kinds of happiness, hedonic or the happiness that is related to hedonism or hedonic happiness, is all about the happiness that comes with pleasures, with luxuries, when you eat something, when you achieve something. As we were talking about, all the happiness that is related to body, mind, the senses, they're all categorized under hedonic happiness. And because the mind, the brain, cannot always be in an excited state, the mind comes with different strategies without your knowledge to come to terms with spikes of happiness or spikes of sorrow. Which means the amount of importance that we give to a certain event. I want to earn $1 million. I want to have that car that this person has. The amount of expectation we have out of that event is never going to deliver that kind of happiness. Because the mind will eventually find ways of getting around that and bringing you back to the set point. So the good news is, don't worry too much about the disasters that could come to you in your life, because your mind will bring you back to balance. Don't chase those events which you think are going to influence your life enormously, because your mind will again bring you back to balance. So what are we supposed to do as we go through this life? And that is where the second set of happiness, which Aristotle talks about, eudaimonic, comes into play. imagine this to be a graph. I mean, this is a radio program, so I cannot show it to you. Brickman and Campbell, when they presented the study, they gave it in the form of a graph, like a typical sine graph, right? Wave graph with a line going through in between, where you have the troughs and the lows, or whatever you call that. I don't know, I'm saying the right thing. So you have the wave going under the line and then going above the line, then again going dipping and then again rising. But the average of that wave is that line which goes in between. So as we pursue all these luxuries in life, however high that luxury might give you a spike in happiness, it will, when it falls, come back to the same level of happiness. So if we choose to be happier in life, if we want to be happier in life, we cannot be happier by chasing these peaks or by avoiding these lows. We can be happy if we are, by some method, are able to slowly increase this set point itself. This threshold which we keep falling back to, we should be able to find ways to increase this threshold itself. And that is the only way where we can become happy overall. So even if something untoward was to happen in my life, the happiness that I fall back to should be a higher level of happiness. Or same as the case with something, with a very happy incident that could happen. And for that, we must work on what is called the eudaimonic happiness. The second type of happiness, which is referred to as eudaimonia, which is derived from fulfillment, from pursuing purposeful activities. When you achieve something meaningful in life, that is where spirituality comes into play. That is where everything that Swami speaks about, the attitude of gratitude, right? The attitude of fulfillment, the attitude of savoring that moment. I might have just 10 bucks in my pocket, but there is a happiness and there is a freedom and there is a joy that can be found in that moment. If I learn the art of savoring that moment, that phase in life, then I am raising this bar of this set point that I will fall back to. The balance of my mind is slowly being raised. And that is why, even as we pursue these small ambitions and goals in life, which is not at all wrong, it is certainly required, as I have been telling in much of this program, that is the fuel that is required to take our life forward. But even as we are doing that, we should be able to raise that bar, and for that, all these attitudes that we develop in life is important. The attitude of gratitude, to be grateful for what we are right now. That will lead to this idea of me being able to be happy for what I have right now, and to savor this moment, and to be fully alive to this moment. Each moment, you know, it could be anything. Even poverty has its own happiness. As one of the poets says, there is a certain peace and silence in being a mute person. There is a certain peace and happiness that comes with poverty. And that also can be relished. If we are able to turn our mind to that state where we are able to enjoy everything, then we are increasing the set point. This cycle of hedonism, this hedonic treadmill, is going to keep happening. Something will come in the way which is going to make us happy. Some relationship is going to come. Some success is going to come. But every time we drop back, we should drop back into a higher state of happiness. And if we are able to do that, it is like, you know, you are spreading all the happiness through life. And as you're going through that, you are raising your level of happiness slowly, slowly, hopefully by the time comes, when we come to the end of this life, we will come a little closer to that Brahmanandam, which Swami says, to that Paramasukhadam, which Swami says, the state of peace that cannot be disturbed by happy tidings and sad happenings. We will be growing closer and closer to that state, right? So spirituality is meant to help us in both. To help us realize that, you know, the feature of this hedonic cycle. Don't give too much importance to success. Don't give too much importance to achievements. They will give you happiness, but 2-3 years down the line, that impact will be gone. Don't be too afraid of the wrong things that can happen to you, because they can trouble you for a brief time and then time heals. And this acknowledgement is what will make us mature in mind. And this maturity will itself ensure that our base point of happiness keeps rising higher and higher. So with that, dear listeners, thank you for your patient listening. I know this has been an afternoon satsang, which is very different, where I have hogged all your attention and spoken to you for this 90 minutes or 80 minutes or so. I am very happy to have your company. I am very grateful to each one of you, not only for this week, but for the many weeks that you have given us company, given us your encouragement and your love. Thank you so much. I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet with the prayer that His words influence our life in a way that we become examples to others, right? If you have to guide the next generation, it can only be through leading happy lives ourselves. If we are able to show them the right way, that is the only way we can pass on this knowledge, right? As Swami said, the best way to spread Vedanta is by living it. There is no better way than that. So praying to Swami that we can imbibe His message in our life and in our small way be examples to the generations to come. I offer this at Swami's lotus feet. I'm going to leave you with a song. On the other side of it, we're going to have the rest of the programs of the day. Till I meet you all next time, take care, keep safe. Jai Sai Ram.
సాయి సాయి ఎనగన.